Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Project Zion podcast. I am Brittany Mangelson, and I will be your host for today. And we are going to be talking about house church. And I am joined here with a few of the Project Zion hosts, Carla Long and Karen Peter. And we are also joined by Blair White. So why don't you all just take a moment to introduce ourselves? Maybe we'll go Carla, Karen, and Blair.
Hi, everyone. It's Carla Long. I'm a host for Project Zion, but now I'm being interviewed, which is actually a little bit more stressful for me. I work as a Latter-day Seeker minister in Utah. I've lived here for about 2.5 years. I have a husband named Kuzma and a daughter named Liadin. And I just really enjoy working for the church in Utah.
So I'm Karen Peter, and I also host some of the Project Zion podcast episodes. And I am in Olympia, Washington, just about to leave for Independence, Missouri, for our World Conference Day. I live here with my spouse, Ray, and we live near all of our extended family, which is sometimes a good thing. And I'm also a little stressed on being interviewed today, although I've done it before, and I don't seem to feel stressed when I make other people do this. So we'll see how it goes.
Hi, I'm Blair White. I'm also on a part of the Latter-day Seeker ministry team here in Utah. Came out roughly the same time that Carla, in July of 2016, out here with my wife, Denise. We're really enjoying this experience and what we're getting to learn and know through this ministry.
Thank you. And I will say that the reason why I asked you all to be on this podcast tonight is because you all have experience with what we call house church. So we are just going to talk about what that is, what some of the advantages or disadvantages are, and just kind of introduce our listeners to what house church is. And so let's start there. What do we mean when we talk about house church? What exactly is house church?
Well, it's definitely a bit of a misnomer because I think out of the three house churches that we work with, Karen, Blair, and I, only one of them actually meets in a house, right? Mm-hmm. So I work, I'm in charge of the Utah County House Church, and we actually meet in an Episcopal church in Provo. And so I think when we said the word house church, I think that at one point it was meeting in a house. Actually, Brittany, I think it was meeting in your house, right? And so it made a lot of sense to call it a house church. But really, when we say house church, what we mean is just a small group of people that's not quite a Community Christ congregation yet. It's just a group of people kind of exploring Community Christ and exploring what Community Christ could mean in their lives.
Thank you. Karen, do you have anything to add to that, since your house church that you are involved with is actually in a house?
In someone's home?
Yeah.
So I agree. It's a small group that's exploring, and it's different than a small group that serves as an emerging congregation. A small group that's an emerging congregation already has a focus to function as a congregation, whereas a small house church has a lot more flexibility and leeway depending on who comes. And it's specifically geared for people who are really wanting to experience what Community of Christ is like.
Awesome. Thank you. Blair, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, as Carla indicated, I lead the Logan group, and we also meet in an Episcopal church, but I've also done house churches in coffee shops, you know, where we would regularly meet. You know, we plan to meet in the coffee shop on a certain, you know, day of the month or whatever. So it can be really flexible, and it's just really about opportunities to have conversation. We've also had a couple gatherings, you know, half a dozen or so in my home here. So I guess that was a house church as well. But it's the small group gathering.
And if I'm remembering correctly from my seminary days that now seem so long ago, when in reality they were just a few months ago, there was something, or maybe there even is still something, cottage meetings where people would come together and meet. And I'm now wondering, was that kind of the beginning of house church? And sorry, I didn't really prep you guys for this question, but as you were talking, I just, this idea of cottage meetings, you know, back in the old days, I don't know, around, but
hey, we still have some, we still have some presidents of 70 that cling to the terminology cottage meetings. So I think they're a little bit different than what we're talking about for house church. Cottage meetings were when two missionary elders or 270 would go to a family's home and meet with them to introduce them to the church and use different materials that were specifically designed for missionary outreach and for teaching about the church.
Got it. Thank you for that clarification, which I think is good to clarify for our listeners who might be more familiar with cottage meetings and maybe less familiar with the house church model. So you all are heavily involved in three different house churches. So why don't we go through and you can, each of you can share maybe how your house churches got started. So Carla, maybe we'll throw it back to you again.
Well, I might have to throw it back to you, actually, because I mean, I know a little bit of the story, but maybe you know how Utah County House Church got started better than I do.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, yeah, with Utah, we have Salt Lake County and then Utah County, and there's always been a congregation in Salt Lake County. There was one, an official established with a building congregation in Orem for decades and decades. That congregation closed and the building was sold, etc. And so when my family first started coming to Community of Christ 4.5-ish, 5 years ago, Salt Lake was the closest thing. And I live about 20 miles, 20 minutes or so south of Salt Lake. And so we just offered to open our home to people who were in our area. There was a handful of people that would have to drive 20 to 30 to 40 minutes up to church. And so we just started meeting monthly and the pastor would come down and we would have different topics of conversation. And we usually had, I don't know, between 7 and 15 maybe people in our home. And we would just meet for food and chat about Community of Christ. So,
and then I'm not exactly sure when this happened, but then when I first came a couple of years ago, we were meeting in the Masonic Lodge, in the basement of the Masonic Lodge. And I actually think a lot of people came because they were very curious about the Masonic Lodge and why a church was meeting in the Masonic Lodge. But one of our members is also a member of the Masonic Lodge. So we got good rent and kind of cheap rent. So when I was there, we met in the Masonic Lodge for a couple of years, and then the Episcopal Church became a really good option for us. It felt more like a sacred space for me, and it felt like a place that we could really have a worship service, more of a worship service than in other places that I had been. So in Utah County, we have, gosh, it's a really interesting group in Utah County. We haven't really found like a core group of people that could really build this congregation. It's really, it seems like it just kind of is a little bit of a stopping over place for people who are just really wanting community and desperate for community. And we do have a couple people who come almost all the time, that's for sure. But really, it just seems to be a searching group is what I actually think of it as. And we meet the second and fourth Sunday of every month at 4:30 in the afternoon, just in case someone are still going to their wards from 1 to 4 or so, so they can still come at 4:30. On the second Sunday in the month, we have communion worship where we serve communion. We also have a children's activity. And then the fourth Sunday in the month, we have something called pizza and conversation. And what that is I bring some pizza and we are able to chat about different stuff in Community of Christ, whatever people want to chat about. Usually the leader will bring an idea of what we're going to chat about, but sometimes that gets railroaded. Sometimes people are going through some pretty serious faith transitions. Sometimes people just need to talk about something else. And on the fourth Sunday, we also have a teen night. So it's a place where teenagers can come and play games and have fun and be together and be completely accepted for who they are. That's really what we are hoping for. I really enjoy the Utah County House Church. St. Mary's Episcopal Church is in a part of town that gets a lot of homeless people too. And so pretty much I would say, 40% of the time we have a homeless person come in, and sometimes that's the Sundays we have pizza so we can offer them some food, and they sometimes stay for worship. And I've had a lot of really interesting experiences with people who just come in off the street and who want to worship with us and then go on their way. It's been eye-opening for me. Just because I've never really lived and been a pastor in that kind of capacity before. So I really do enjoy it.
Thank you. Karen, what about your house church? What can you tell us about it?
So the house church in Idaho, it has some similarities to what Carla was describing, in the sense that people gather because they're yearning for community. And I would say even yearning for an authentic community where they can be really who they are, not who others expect them to be. And so we have people who are going through faith transitions or do not feel whole in different aspects of their lives for different reasons. And so in that house church, we gather together, and it, interestingly, has been all women who gather. And they have developed a real sense of supporting one another and caring for one another, even to the point when our host, whose home in which we meet, was ill, they checked on her and brought her homemade soup and really just made sure that she was okay without anybody prompting them or asking them to do that. And so there's a sense of community that's developed. I think some of the things we hear at House Church are that people want a place where they can ask questions about faith and about spiritual connectedness. They're looking for a place where they can express diverse opinions about what God is or if God is. It's a safe space for those kinds of conversations at House Church. And we use the small group resources from the website for House Church. And sometimes we get through all of it. And sometimes we get sidetracked into other important conversations. But we always have the sacrament of communion at House Church. We meet once a month and we do that every time. And that's become a really important expression of our time together. And other than that, we have major snacks, and we, after House Church, talk and talk and talk until it's really, really late. And that sometimes is where the real relationships are formed, is over snacks after the small group resource is done.
I know I like snacks. Anything that involves food is good. So I definitely think food is an important component to this. Blair, what about you? What can you tell us about the Logan House Church and how it started and what that looks like?
Again, I'm kind of in the situation where Carla, it was started before we arrived. In my understanding, there were some folks up in Logan, which is a university town. Utah State is there. That's I believe, Brittany's alma mater. And there were some people exploring up there who Community of Christ was. And so there was a need for ministers in Utah to start going up there. And there were some predominant families, I guess, initially, that really helped get the group going. And it was going pretty well. And then a couple families moved out. And then others kind of came in and joined the group. And so it's been real fluid. And I think that's pretty, it's typical of kind of what's been expressed, at least in Provo as well, in Utah County. I think what their experience in Southern Idaho has been a little more consistent. They're a really cohesive group, it sounds like. Within Logan, you know, we've had people who have joined a church, and you know, we thought, okay, here's an opportunity. We're going to, you know, we've got some roots in the community that we're going to be able to expand with, and then with jobs and everything, get relocated and moved out. And so, you know, the transition that people take as they explore one faith tradition and moving out of one to another, it's a long process. And I think they like to know that we're there when they can come, but it kind of makes it difficult, you know, as leaders about, you know, how do we carry this out when there's not a real core and we're so as fluid as we are. And so that makes it difficult. And even when I think, as others have shared, when we are gathered, you know, for those that are considering this kind of ministry or, you know, the opportunities that might be available to them, don't get stuck on an agenda for your evening. You know, be really fluid. Just be open to the conversation of where it needs to go. The questions will come. And just having an authentic relationship means a lot. And I know I get a lot out of developing those authentic relationships in house churches sometimes that we don't have the opportunity to have in larger congregational life because we're much more intimate setting.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think just knowing Utah and the dynamics of a college town in general, both in Provo and in Logan, there's a lot of people in and out. Like you said, I went to Utah State and I didn't stay there. And I was actually born in Provo and I didn't stay there either. So it's kind of the way of those college towns, which can be challenging when you're trying to, like you said, establish roots. So Karen talked a little bit about the resource that they use in their house church, the format and the resource of sacred space. I'm wondering, Carla and Blair, have you used that resource as well? Or do you kind of go through by different topics? Or what do you use to form your service as far as resources go?
Sometimes we use that resource. We had just finished up a series for last year in which we went through discipleshiping community of Christ. And we did that on the third Sunday of the month because we meet up there on the first and third so that we can alternate with Utah County. And so we took basically a year to go through that resource just in case people, you know, if they wanted to explore, okay, I know what this means in my faith. What does this mean within community of Christ? What is, you know, what does temple ministries mean? You know, when we're looking at the two different faiths, what does understanding of God mean? And so, you know, we were using that every other month or every other time we met. And then, you know, sometimes we would use the sacred space resource that Karen referred to. Other times we would just kind of be kind of paying attention also to the needs of the group and what would be best suited for them at that time.
Also, a lot of times we would just use a lectionary scripture for that day. What I've learned from being out here in Utah that a lot of people who come to Community of Christ are not necessarily biblically literate. And so when you use a lectionary text in a small group, you really have time to sit down and kind of discuss it. And sometimes we do a dwelling in the word with it and let the scripture just marinate in people's minds and figure out how the scripture can relate to their life. Sometimes we have maybe a little talk about it, you know, maybe just a little minor sermon, a homily, if you will, maybe half homily, if you will. But the lectionary text is almost always generates pretty incredible conversations as well.
I agree with the lectionary text. I think in the small group resource, that's the one thing that's been really helpful as people are walking through the biblical text with each lectionary reading. And it's been a really good experience. And I agree with what Blair said about fluidity. You just have to look at who's there and what the needs are. And I think it was Carla one time that said, sometimes when people come, we need to have a really, what did you call it? Geeky theological conversation. Yeah, you're frowning. And other times it's more of a relationship, heart-based kind of thing where people are just sharing their story. It really depends on who's there and what happens during that time together and where that goes. And the biggest skill that's needed, if you will, is the ability to listen and to allow people to share and to kind of go where that takes you and be with people as they share their story.
One time this past fall, Carla was planning our gathering in Logan, and something happened. I can't remember what. We forgot the key. And we couldn't get into the building. And so we ended up going to a park. And we knew some of who were coming. And so we made sure they were aware where we were going to meet. And in the park, we had this little boy come up and joined us for our gathering. And yeah, it's a good thing we were able to be fluid. But it was also a joy to be to have him with us and to have him, that perspective, come into the conversation.
I love that. And I can just imagine the panic of when you drive an hour and a half to 2 hours north, and then suddenly you get to the building and you realize you don't have the key. A moment where you are forced to let the spirit breathe.
Sadly, it's happened more than once, and it's almost always my fault, FYI.
Oh, boy. So what would you guys say are some of the advantages to a house church versus a regular traditional Sunday service that you would typically see in Community of Christ? What are some of the advantages of meeting in smaller groups with more fluidity?
I think I mentioned in mine, from my perspective, I think it really allows an intimacy. It allows the conversation to go where it needs to go. You know, when we're gathering for larger groups, there's more organization because you got to develop this flow that we think needs to happen anyway. And there's normally hymn singing and those kind of things. And sometimes in small groups, some of that's not necessary in order to have deep, meaningful worship. Because in our relationship with one another, we recognize that the Spirit is kind of melding us together in this conversation of exploring our various faith journeys and what those things have meant to us. Where when we're gathered in large groups, we don't have time for everyone to share in that conversation.
And I just kind of love little things like this that are harder to happen in congregations. I'm thinking of the time when we had a member who was confirmed in Utah County, and his 5-year-old daughter was there. And for the very last hymn, we were singing For Everyone Born, and we were sitting in a circle, as we usually do, so that we can see people and hear people. And his 5-year-old daughter, you know, it's an upbeat song, especially when it's played from the recorded music already. It's really upbeat. So she started just dancing in the middle of the circle, and Blair started dancing with her. And, you know, those kinds of things do happen in regular congregations and regular Community Christ congregations, but people are a little bit perhaps more reticent to do that. But in that group, she felt safe. She felt happy. She was excited about what was going on, and she felt like she could dance. And it was, I mean, everyone remembers it. Everybody who was there certainly remembers it. And it was a really joyous moment.
I think there's some practical advantages as well. For one, cost is that it's much less expensive to meet in a house church. And so the funds that are available can be used for other things during the house church experience, which is really helpful. I think the atmosphere for us being in someone's home is very familiar and comforting. And the person whose home it is offers marvelous hospitality to the house church and really sets a tone of welcome and appreciation for everyone that comes. And I think for us, because we use the small group resource, Sacred Space, in that the prayer for peace is offered every time. And that that has become something that different people feel comfortable doing because it's explained in on the piece of paper that they have. But we also have had the opportunity to ask people from House Church to write some prayers for peace to be included in future sacred space outlines. And we had the joy of one of our House Church folks wrote a prayer, and it was worship. It got borrowed for the daily bread and the worship resources out of the sacred space resource. And so because she was at House Church, we just swapped out her prayer for the one that was designated for House Church that night. And we had the freedom to do that because it's a really informal experience. And we got to celebrate with her that her prayer was used churchwide.
I absolutely love that through House Church and the connections that we are making through these small gatherings, that in their own ways, they are being connected to the larger community. And Karen, I think that that story is a perfect example of just that. I will say, I was thinking of the advantages that I saw in the House Church model. And I think that, I know when I was first coming into Community of Christ, it was one thing to kind of see how a worship service was done, but it was another thing to just get down to the nitty gritty. And I guess Blair kind of touched on this a little bit of, you know, I had these perceptions of what priesthood and God and scripture and all these things meant, but I wanted to know what Community of Christ's response was. What were Community of Christ's beliefs, or what did they teach about X, Y, and Z? And so with House Church, not only do you get some sort of worship experience, especially if you use the sacred space resource, but you also have that time to just be like, okay, shoot it to me straight, you know, and have those conversations about questions and just the things that seekers, not just Latter-day seekers, but seekers in general are wondering about, and how they want to be introduced to the church. It's a really good way to do that. So what would you say are some of the disadvantages to house churches? What are some of the challenges that you all have run into?
I don't know if the Provo house church is a anomaly or not, but, and I don't know if this is a disadvantage or just the way we are down there, but you know, we don't have a lot of stickiness, if that makes sense, you know? So people are interested and people come and people want to hear about Community of Christ and people want to be a part of what's happening, but then we might not see them again for 2 or 3 months, and then they come back, and then we might not see them for a couple more months, and they might come back or they might not come back. So I wish that we had a way to help people, at least in Provo, maybe take ownership of the church on there and want to be a part of building the community. I feel like I'm part of the Utah Valley Interfaith Association too, and they have some things that are happening, and I just don't feel like our Provo House Church can really be a part of it because we don't have the community to be a part of it. Like they want to have, for instance, canned food drives. And so I might ask people to come or bring canned foods, I mean, and you know, they might not come again for the next 2 months. So it's really hard for me to build that community in Provo. I don't think that's been the experience of all house churches, it sounds like, but in Provo it is. And this isn't a disadvantage of house churches in general, but Provo is a really interesting place. We have a few BYU students who come, but they have to come secretly because they're not really allowed to go to another church if they've already signed the honor code, so on and so forth, to go to BYU. So we walk a really fine line in Provo. We have to be a secret group at times. And at one point, the missionary teacher or a professor and missionary, she wanted to bring her students to Community of Christ, to our house church to listen to see what we do. So I had to message our students that come from BYU. I'm like, just so you know, a teacher from BYU is coming. You might not want to come this time. And they're like, thank you so much for letting me know. We are definitely not coming. And So that's really hard. I feel really bad for those students, and it just doesn't seem very fair. So that's not a disadvantage of house church in general, but that's a disadvantage of being in Provo.
Blair or Karen?
I think one of the disadvantages for the house church I participate in is that because we're small in numbers, it's not for everybody. It is an intimate feeling, as Blair said, an intimate environment. And that doesn't work for everybody. There's no place to hide. There's nobody to sit behind to be anonymous. You're there. And if that doesn't work for you, you won't be comfortable at house church. And we have people who only come once and it's not for them. Or we've had lots of people online say, oh, I want to come. And then they have never actually come, even though they've talked about it lots of times. I think it takes a lot of courage to psych yourself up to go to somebody's home where you've never been before, you've never met anybody, and just show up and ring the doorbell. And so, like I said, it can be really intimidating. It's not something everybody would enjoy. I'm an introvert. I would not enjoy it if I was on the other end of it. It's not something that I would look for. So, yeah.
Yeah. So as Karen touched, you know, there are a number of people, I think, within all of our groups that have an interest in the group, but just don't seem to get there. And, you know, I know in Logan, there have been times when I've been up there by myself and no one showed up. And while that may sound really discouraging, and sometimes it is, to be truthful, there have been times when I would go through the order of worship that I had prepared. One of the things that we understand about Christian faith, and I learned this in through my seminary experiences, I visited a Greek Orthodox church one Sunday, and that there was the only people in the church were two old ladies and myself and the priest and whoever the other person was up there assisting the priest. But they carried it out. And the reason they carried out the service was that we do it for the people, whether the people there or not. And so there have been times that I've carried out what I had prepared, even sung the songs by myself, for the people, because even though they are not there, I know there are people in that community that are hurting and longing for a faith community that they can connect with in a way that they are no longer able to connect with the faith community they grew up in. So it can be discouraging, but we have to always remember that we don't do this for ourselves. We're doing it for the people.
That's really beautiful, Blair. And I think worship in and of itself is, well, it's obviously a spiritual practice. And so I really admire you for carrying out what you've planned, even if nobody shows up. And that devotion, I think, speaks volumes. I mean, it's really powerful. So, Carla, have you run into anyone who has been maybe turned off or scared away because of the size? Karen pointed out that she's experienced that. I'm wondering if you have, whether it was meeting in the Masonic Lodge or now at the Episcopal Church. Are people expecting a full congregation when they come?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I really know the reasons why people might not come back. And maybe that's one of the reasons why. You know, we go to Provo Pride and we have a booth at Provo Pride. And so everybody who stops by and wants to talk to us, you know, we explain exactly what the house church is and that there's not a lot of people that come and that we have a lot of, it's discussion based. It's not sit in the pew and be a passive observer. We're all active participants in the worship service. So I'm usually really open about what it is. I do also have a meetup. I've put some things out on meetup and I'm pretty honest about what we do. And we've had some interest in meetup too. You know, there was this, I'm thinking about this one man who showed up one time. I don't know. He only came one time, but he made an impact on every single person that was there. It was one of our nights for pizza and conversation. And Charmaine Shabala Smith just happened to be in town for a women's retreat. And so she came to Provo House Church with us. And there was probably only about maybe eight to 10 people there. And so he walked through the door and we eat early. Like we eat around 4:30 because that's when we meet. And he came in, he was welcomed. He grabbed a piece of pizza. He kind of just threw it on the table and he sat down and he goes, "I've been sitting in the parking lot for 30 minutes. We're like, oh, we're sorry. He's like, "No, I've been wondering if I could come in." And he just told this heartbreaking story of what his life was like. And he attended a certain denomination and he did not believe in that denomination anymore. And he was desperately unhappy. And it just felt like it was the time and the space for him to tell his story. He was so desperate to get it off of his chest. And we were just the place for him to do it. So did he not come back because of the size? I don't think so. I think he didn't come back because it's a little bit scary. Like Blair was saying, there's a lot of pressure on people to walk through our doors when you live in Utah and when the dominant culture says walking through our doors is not a good thing to do. So I am actually almost always surprised when new people do walk through the door, just because it takes so much courage to do it. And it could change, just that one small act could change their entire life. So I don't know why people don't come back. It might be because of the size. It might be because we ask too much of people, but I think there are many other reasons why.
One of the other challenges we face in house churches is we typically have, at least here in Utah, it's young families that are often inquiring about who is community of Christ. And so there are children involved. And so there's that struggle to understand. I mean, you want to be able to engage the children in appropriate ways for their understanding. And you want time for the adults to be able to express and talk about what they need to talk about too. And so when we're small groups, that can be a little more challenging for some. And so, yeah, so I think with the predominant culture, they are used to walking into large groups and having a huge program to take care of the children for no matter what age they may be. And so that makes it a little more difficult in house church type settings.
So I'm wondering if any of you have had experience with helping others catch the vision of what house church and what your growing communities can be. I suspect that Karen has some experience in this because she has maybe more of a core group that is consistently coming. But if any of you want to speak to that, feel free.
So I'm not sure helping people kind of catch the vision of what it is. I think we've simply responded to how we've responded to being sensitive to where people are and just kind of let that guide us. And so we haven't really talked about what a house church is supposed to be or where it might go or anything like that. We've simply been responding to the people that come and who and how they are. So for some people, they come because it's an issue of their sexuality and they're not free to be who they are in other settings. And so our house church has become a really supportive, loving environment because of that. It's also, though, not only provided support in that instance, but it's changed the community of Christ people, especially in the sense that the host where we meet through this experience wants to participate in the Pride Festival in her town and wants her congregation to participate in the Pride Festival in that town. And so house church is changing the community of Christ people as much as it's opening community of Christ to new people. And for me, that's the joy and the potential of house church. It's not simply providing ministry to other people. It's acknowledging that when we engage in these kinds of relationships where we really are authentic selves, we all change, we all transform. So that's my pitch for house church, if you will.
Thank you. Carla and Blair, do you have any thoughts?
My thoughts on catching the vision aren't necessarily related to my experience here in Utah. When I was doing coffee shop ministries in Morgantown, West Virginia, I would do them on a Wednesday evening. And then my assignment that time was the Maryland, Virginia area. And as I talked about what was happening in the coffee shop in Morgantown, others in the Maryland area said, we want to learn more about that because, you know, maybe it's not, they had a particular group of people that they thought could help that were kind of outside the confines or understandings of the church. And so we started another small group ministry over there because others caught a vision that there is a whole lot of ways to be the church, to be God's people. And so, that's how I understand is helping others catch the vision, just to be experimenting and to share that you're experimenting with others so that they perhaps will stir up something within them as well.
Thank you.
I think, Brittany, I think the language we're using now when we really begin to talk about this in a broader terms, house churches would fit into the new expressions of the church and experimenting with new forms and new ways of being the church that just don't look like a normal congregation with a whole bunch of people sitting in pews. And house churches are an expression of that, that are unique to the ministry and climate of what we call the Latter-day Seekers, or people who are finding community of Christ as an expression of the restoration tradition. And so I think when we begin to talk about them, each house church is different because the people are different and the needs are different. But what we have in common is that people are investigating community of Christ as a viable alternative for their faith journey.
Exactly. And I think maybe when, you know, when I ask the question about the vision, I guess it's because I quote unquote caught the vision. I guess being introduced to the church in a very relational way, I was able to see my small congregation that was very small when we first arrived. And I just kind of kept thinking, well, if I can't complain that it's small, if I'm not willing to help it grow. So if we start coming, maybe another family will see, okay, there's at least one family with kids, and maybe another family, and maybe another family. And, but it can be really hard, and that's not necessarily the church vibe that everyone's going for. I mean, when you're meeting in somebody's home, in somebody's living room, it's going to be a completely different look and format. And I think that's what the beauty of house church is, whether it's in a coffee shop or a rented space, a rented worship space from another denomination or in somebody's home, et cetera, that it is responding to the needs of that area. And on Project Zion, we talk a lot about mission being contextual. And I think that this is a really good example of that.
You know, actually there was in Utah County, I've been talking about how we're kind of like a searching group. And there was Kuzma and I, when we first moved to Utah back in September 2016, we took a little 10-day trip, and we drove to California to see some of my old friends, and then we drove back through, and then we went to St. George Congregation, St. George House Church, and we met someone down there who was attending St. George for the first time. And this person didn't live in St. George. He actually lived kind of out in the middle of nowhere, Utah, and he had to drive 3 hours to get to St. George. And so we had a really good conversation with him, and he met the pastor of the St. George House Church, and we enjoyed it. Like I provided the service down there that Sunday. A little while later, that person contacted me and said, you know, I feel like it might be easier for me to come to Provo rather than St. George. It was about the same distance, but the roads were better, and I think he could see his mother on the way also to Provo rather than going to St. George. So he started coming up to Provo, and he would drive like 3 hours to get to Provo House Church. And he said later that those trips in the car where he would listen to podcasts and were his Sunday worship for him. And to come to Provo, that was his Sunday worship for him. That was really important part of his month. It just so happened that he ended up getting a job in Salt Lake. And so he comes to Provo House Church a lot. And now he is actually leading our worship in Provo House Church, and he's doing an excellent job. And so just from being a non-member and not knowing anything about Community of Christ in October 2016 to now, he is leading worship in Provo, and it's just really exciting to see the growth that could happen from someone who, you know, who didn't know anything about us at first. It's been really exciting to watch that.
I think it's really interesting to see how sometimes people are introduced maybe in one community, one geographical area. And then, like Blair mentioned, some people that joined in Logan then have since relocated. I know one family that now attends in Salt Lake that started in Logan. And so you really just never know where moving in life is going to take you, I guess. So I think that we kind of have already gone over this a little bit, but do you guys have any thoughts about House Church and how it might be a helpful model as the church moves into the future and what maybe congregational life or church life looks like? Do you think that this House Church model is going to be helpful as we live into the future?
Well, I'm not totally sure. It might be. I think one of the most important parts of House Church is something that Karen said earlier, is that it's not very expensive and you don't have to be tied down to a building. I think what we're finding now is that buildings that were built 50, 60, 70, 100 years ago are failing and they're needing a lot of work and it needs a lot of money. And that money could be going towards mission instead of a new roof, for instance. So I think the House Church model could be really important for that reason, and probably some other reasons too, but just that reason alone, that it doesn't cost very much money at all, could be a really important factor in the future of the church.
I think it's also a model for the building of really solid relationships. I think sometimes in congregational life, we can get by with just the "I'm fine" as we are greeted in congregational experience, but in a house church that doesn't work. You're talking and sharing and you really become involved in each other's story and each other's lives, and you get to know each other and you have some really deep intimate experiences with God's Spirit that moves in house church differently than it moves in a formal worship service. And so I think house church provides that kind of informal opportunity as well. Just the nature of it being smaller helps with that.
I'm also curious if anything has surprised you with your journeys with House Church. Does anything particularly stand out as something that you unexpectedly ran into, or just anything that jumped out at you that you were not expecting?
So we do have some interesting characters show up in Provo every once in a while. For instance, one Sunday we had two young men show up and they were wearing name badges that said Elder so-and-so. And I was like, woo. I mean, they were welcomed in and they joined the worship service and they were very kind and wonderful. And I did not get it. I did not understand who they were. And it turns out they were from a polygamous community in Provo. And they were, I don't know exactly what they were doing. I think they might have been trying to see who we were and maybe find some people to join them. One of the young men, I said, where are you from? What church are you from? And he said, I think that some people might call us the Brighamites. I was like, okay, cool. And then one of them said, we were doing introductions, and he said, I have 24 brothers and sisters. And I was like, oh, your mother must be very tired. I still did not get it. So, So that was a very big surprise for me that so we might have some interesting characters show up at the Provo House Church. So, yeah, I, needless to say, I'm not very bright, and I was very surprised.
I think I'm surprised every time someone new comes to House Church that we hadn't met before, because I said it takes an inordinate amount of courage to go walk up the stairs and knock on someone's door and introduce yourself into an hour or 2 hours of relationship with new people. And I just think that that is amazing when people do that. And I've also been surprised at how closely we've bonded in a short amount of time.
Do you have any thoughts, Blair? Anything that has surprised you on this House Church journey?
Yeah, what Karen just shared there, it's amazingly how fast that, and Carla's referred to it too, how fast that in these small groups, you can go from just introductions to telling some of the deepest stories of your life. And to me, that's always astonishing. And in Logan, we have a particular group participant up there that is very regular with us. And so it's just watching that whole relationship develop with this new individual in just these real authentic ways. And it's just like, how did that happen? And so to me, it's just an affirmation of the Spirit trying to work and to provide healing in people's lives. And we should never be surprised by that, but we always are.
Yes, we always are. I think we're even surprised. I'm speaking for myself, but I was surprised when it happened to me. I was not necessarily looking for another church to join or to spill my guts to the people that I spilled my guts to like I did. But it was really exactly what I needed at the time and what I continue to need. So we're wrapping it up a little bit, and I'm wondering if, since you all now have a little bit of experience under your belt, if there is anything that you wish you would have known when you were just getting started exploring small ministries or house churches, that if you could go back and tell yourself, warn yourself of anything or do something over again, what would that be?
I think I would worry less about making sure everything was organized and prepared and exactly the way that it needed to be, because it never ever works out that way. and so fretting over every last detail was wasted time.
I would tell myself that it's okay to listen to the Spirit, and in fact it's really important to do so. A really quick story. I directed a reunion last year in July, and I had to do house church. Reunion ended on Saturday, and I did house church on Sunday, and I was really tired. And I decided to do a spiritual practices worship. And part of me thought I was kind of doing a cop out, because a spiritual practices worship, what I had chosen to do was going to be really easy. Like, I didn't have to prepare much for it, and really I could just step in and do it and then go home and sleep. And so I kept kind of talking myself out. I was like, Carla, you should actually you need to prepare. You need to do something else. This is too easy. It's not really what you're supposed to do. And then there was another voice who was like, just do the spiritual practice. So I went to house church. Only a couple people showed up, and we were going to do the spiritual practice that I called chapters. It's where everybody gets 5 minutes to tell a chapter of their life. And it's just uninterrupted time. And everybody gets the full 5 minutes. And if they don't take the full 5 minutes, we just sit in silence for the rest of the 5 minutes. And so as we were getting started, there were some homeless people around the church. And it was hot outside. So I invited them in if they wanted to come in. And I told them what we were doing. And at first they didn't really want to come in. And then they're like, oh, but it's so hot out here, we'll come in and just sit. I was like, okay. and they both participated in the spiritual practice. And when one of them started speaking, it was as if the spirit was just resting. And it was really meaningful to everyone in the room, I think, and especially meaningful to the man who was talking. He told me later, he's like, thank you for letting me speak. Nobody listens to the homeless. And I was like, gosh, what would I have missed out on if I would have talked myself out of doing that spiritual practice at that time? What would we have missed out on? And so, yeah, just listening to the spirit and allowing that to guide you is what I would tell myself. And yeah, like Karen said, be less rigid, maybe. Just. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even though the three of us have been are group leaders in these small house churches, and we have others in there that we depend on, also look to those fairly new to the group and what their contribution can be. We had experience down in Utah County, also dealing with some homeless that some different homeless folks that then Carlos talked about. And though I was kind of one of the group leaders in that setting, there was another person that attends occasionally, and they took hold of the situation in a really beautiful way. And so it's, you know, the thing I'm trying to say here is that don't feel like as a group leader, you need to be the one. You need to give space to others and allow that whatever's welling within them to take ownership and jump in there and applaud them and cheer them when they do. I just thought it was a beautiful thing to see that happen that day.
I think that's really interesting in hearing all three of your responses. And it seems to me like the underlining thread that is going through all of them is just giving up control, having, you know, really letting the spirit breathe and really recognizing that it's not about you as the minister, but it's about ministering with people and letting them minister to you and sharing stories and lives and experiences. And like Blair said, allowing them to take ownership and get involved. And I think that is such a beautiful thing. And maybe one of the things that when we get in the rut of the mundane routine in our congregations, maybe we miss out on some of those experiences where there's the flexibility and the ability for people to just really feel comfortable jumping in. So thank you, guys. Thank you all for sharing about your various house churches. Is there anything else you would like to leave us with as we wrap up?
No, I just thank you for the opportunity to do this. I don't actually sit down and think about the house church all that often. You know, I don't sit down and think about what a difference it's made in my life and what a difference it's made in other people's lives. So I appreciate actually being able to talk about it. So I appreciate it. Thanks for asking the questions, Brittany.
Yeah, I just echo, you know, thanks for the opportunity to share. And hopefully if there are some listeners out there wondering if, you know, is this something that I can do or is this something I can go to? I say yes. I'm fully confident that just being hospitable can open doors for the creation of house churches. And for those considering, we talked about intimacy, but there's also a lot of fun and laughter and joy that goes on there too. And so I think they're great opportunities to come to know what is the living spirit trying to do within us as we engage those in our communities wondering the same thing.
So when I was a little kid, our congregation didn't have a building and we met in people's houses. And I remember as a kid going to those, and I can still picture some of the houses of some of the senior members of the congregation. And and what that was like. And so I think it's interesting that this aspect of my life in ministry, that sharing in that house church kind of way, is back being meaningful in my life again.
That is really interesting and really beautiful, and I think shows the longevity of small groups meeting outside of traditional, what we would consider, you know, a traditional Sunday service. And I think that this is something that's going to carry us into the future. And I think that there's a lot of beauty and a lot of ways for people to get involved. So thank you, everyone. I just want to thank you for joining us tonight. And I want to mention to our listeners that if you have any questions about house churches, you're always free to talk to your field apostle. So thank you, Blair and Carla and Karen.
Thanks Brittany.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, y'all.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.